What's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Beyond the Arc. As usual, I'm here with my homeboy, Suku. Suku, what's going on, dog?
What up, dog? How you doing, man?
I'm easy, dog. I'm easy. And for today's episode, we actually have a guest, a special guest in the house. He's a strategist at some advertising agency, but also he's a crazy basketball enthusiast. I think he loves the game more than just as much as Suku and I do. What's going on, Lisoko Thomas?
What's going on, gentle? How you guys doing?
All good. All good, man. Dope to have you on board, bro.
Yeah. No, shout out. Thanks for the invite. Let's get it. Yeah.
So we got the back four in the building, just for those who don't know.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Representing the back four. One, four of the back four in the house.
Center back. So, yo, man. Well, first of all, shout for coming through and, you know, joining us for tonight's episode. And then secondly, how has life been without the NBA, bro?
Hey, man. I mean, look. Of course, there is the documentary that we have to sort of keep us closely attached to the game, or else the game is not there.
Yeah.
So that's been quite. It's lessened the blow a little bit, you know. So, but also we kind of do miss what's happening currently. I mean, you go online and you see videos of players that are returning from injury, like KD, and then you see him shooting hoops, and you're like, shucks, man, when was the last time I actually got to see a player like KD on the court doing his thing, you know? When you're looking at the Last Dance and you compare the different eras, obviously it was of its own era. It had its own, you know, things about it that made it so unique that are different to the current era. But then in doing that, you also realize what this game has today. And then you then go back to the fact that it's not happening, you know, and then you then get craved to have it back, you know, whilst there isn't much physicality in today's game, but it's very much technical. And you want to see the technical side of it being played by the James Hardens and again, the KDs and the LeBron Jameses and the Steph Currys, who was getting back from injury and he was going off, you know, in his first day from injury, just doing what he does, you know. So I mean, it's been a difficult time, but not as bad as it is in other sports. And I suppose as ball fans, we can be quite thankful for that.
Yeah. I think I should warn the viewers that, you know, we normally try to keep the show to 30 minutes, but it's going to be difficult because, as you can see, Isoko knows how to chop.
I'm a strategist, guys.
Exactly. That's why we're here, yo. That's why we're here. But I'll respect whatever time barrier you have as best as I can.
This is a free platform to talk and, you know, spread our love for the game. So you know, like you said, you know, we're lucky enough to have the documentary to kind of like keep us interested and invested in the game and to kind of like give us a talking point, right? And that's what Suku and I always try to do, is we always try to find things from the show to kind of like pull into, you know, stuff that happened in the past, but also stuff that's happening now in the game. But before we go into that, right, there's a lot of talking points from this week's episode. But I think we have to start off with a toast. And I think this week, because we had a young Kobe on the show, cheers to Kobe Bryant. Cheers, fellas.
And also happy birthday to Vanessa, man. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Vanessa Bryant, yeah.
Shout out to Suku for warning. Suku actually warned me on the last podcast, that Kobe was going to make an appearance. So I was like, you know, prepare myself emotionally and then jumped into the show. So before we get into the topic, Suku, you can go first. What was your favorite thing about this week's episode? Or this week's two?
I think there was a lot to take from it, man. I think it was interesting just to see like how, like they kind of broke down how Jordan came to be the person he is, like with the deals and the ego, how he came to become that brand. And how he, and just kind of was like an impact thing, and just how he was able to affect everything around him. I think for me, my favorite thing might have been, I think the Dream Team stuff. Like, I think the Dream Team was something which we all knew about, but to see the way things played out and some of the controversy around it, and like that whole thing, and like the whole situation at practice where Magic called him out, and then Jordan was just like, dog, I ain't having that shit. and then basically like came through and balled them up. Like I think that was like that was quite a it was a refreshing thing to see, because like you don't often see these guys in that kind of space. I mean, we see him at the Bulls where he has to carry the work, like basically carry the load, but in the Dream Team to still have that level of confidence to believe that no, like Magic, like I know this is your team, but I'm the man, and I'm gonna show you that I'm the man. So that was quite cool just to see, like basically someone come through and just take over, like in that kind of setting. I thought that was quite dope to see.
Yeah, dope. And for people watching at home, Suka's not wearing earrings. Those are AirPods, right? Like it kind of looks like you got something on for the show. And then Lesenko, what was your? I mean, obviously, like you know, Suku said, there's a lot to take out. Mm. What was your favorite moment from the show this? This week actually.
Yeah, I mean. Yes, the Dream Team obviously was very, very cool to see. I think also just in terms of the amount of star power.
Yeah.
On that side. I mean, it was absolutely insane. Even guys like a Charles Barkley, you know, a young 92 Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, MJ himself. You know, it was
the Monstars, man.
it was unreal. That, but also, I enjoyed, you know, some of the stuff that was, you know, speaking, you know, off the court. So one example is how the sneaker deal came through, the birth of Air Jordan. And what was interesting for me is, you know, in the times in which we grew up and what is this, we were exposed to, when it was all done, you know, when Nike was as big as it was. You know, MJ is the face of it. The work is done. You know, by the time I was able to comprehend what was done. So I did not, what I completely missed the fact is the brand that Nike was before MJ. So now realizing that now makes you realize just how huge that was, you know, for him, for how huge that partnership was, how huge that deal was, you know, and just what, not only did Nike do for MJ, but what MJ had done for Nike as well. I think they projected to make, I think, about $3 million, and they made $126 that year.
Yeah.
In the first deal, it was absolutely insane. And also, last, and I'll keep that brief, is just the stresses that he, and the pressures that he had to go through, particularly from the media, and just the toll that was on him. You know, you can imagine being at that level for as long as he was, from as early in his career as it was, with all that he had to deal with in the time and the intensity of the league at the time, would obviously take its toll. And I think what that showed was just a nice reminder from all that we hear about MJ that he actually was human as well. He needed a break. You know, I mean, when they won the champion, I think there was a game, I think it was the next game, where he's like, can I just sit here for 30 minutes and maybe just call my wife at home and just, you know, chat to her. I don't want to talk to the media. I don't want to talk to my teammates. I don't want to talk to anyone that's related to the NBA. I just want to be a human being. 10 minutes
to myself.
You know? Yeah. So that why I enjoyed that probably the most is because of the reminder that it was that as much as MJ could fly, he could do unreal things, he was a human being at the end of the day.
No, most definitely. I think the first the couple of points you guys made is, you know, first of all, the Dream Team, which is probably one of the best not basketball, but just teams in all sports probably ever, you know. I think some of the Barcelona teams might have something to do about it being the best, you know, team ever in terms of any sports. But, you know, it was a pretty well put together team and it had some really dope superstars. And then I think the interesting thing for me with the sneaker deal with Jordan, firstly, was a thing of like, Jordan was, Michael Jordan was an Adidas fan. So he was all about like, yo, but I want an Adidas deal though. Like, why am I even going to Nike? And then secondly was, you know, the fact that his mom had to drag him to be like, dude, just go and at least see these guys. And then for his father to be like, you'll be an idiot if you don't actually take this deal. And from seeing Jordan go to in the 92 Olympics, when, you know, they're walking around and, you know, they've just received their gold medals and there's a whole thing that you have to show the Reebok badge, and there's loyalty to the brand has gone so far at that point that he covers up the Reebok badge was just like insane. But I think my favorite moment was, and I think you spoke a bit about it, and I think you actually tweeted about it, was, you know, there's something that Barack Obama said about, like, you know, when Jordan was like, you know, I just want to play basketball. I don't care about politics, you know? Yeah. And then his quote was, I'm not going to get it right word for word. But it was like, if I inspire you, that's cool. But if I don't, then I'm not the guy for you. And that's it, dog. And that's it. You know, like,
that's
simple. I loved that so much.
People were touched by that. And I was like, but then
I don't got to be all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. You know, so, I think the weird thing is, like, just thinking about all the different elements of the show. I mean, just think about some of the stuff that we've spoken about now, you know, from the introduction of Kobe at the beginning of the episode and, you know, Michael kind of like anointing him as the next Michael Jordan, to the Dream Team, to talking about Isaiah Thomas, to talking about Michael Jordan behind the scene and the betting and the media. Like, they covered all that seamlessly in the 2-hour, like, yo, dog, like, I think, props to those guys for the way they've put the show together.
Yeah, I'd probably say that this sequence was probably like the most engaging because it took us like beyond the court in like a very real way. Like, it gave us an insight into him. I mean, even the whole Tony Kukoc thing.
Oh.
Where they were like, all right, cool. We're going to prove that this guy doesn't belong in the NBA. And they literally targeted him.
Yeah.
And then he but was like, know, yo, like.
You know what is nice about that, though? I like what it gave insight to is just how much of a killer Michael Jordan actually was, eh? And Scottie actually, like, you know, they were like, you think this player's what? Okay, all right. Is that what you think? Okay, we'll then show you. And in the first game, they were merciless. Like, I mean, even Scottie Pippen himself, you know, Scottie Pippen, he was on the court, he was hard, and he was very skillful, he was very technical, and he was an absolutely brilliant player, but he wasn't, you know, as aggressive mentally and psychologically as what MJ was or other players of the time. But particularly in that game, so as to prove that point, it was nice to see how Scottie Pippen himself as a player was able to bring that out of him, you know, and add a little bit more of, I suppose, personality and aggression to his game.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see in that instance. Just the level of killer mentality that Scottie Pippen actually has, particularly because the series started with him coming out on the bad side of a 7-year deal, and people were like, how could he agree to do this? And, you know, being labeled the nice guy, and that was the persona then, and that was what was believed to be about then. And now we got to see the other side of him, which is the championship winning side of him.
Yeah. What I really dig, though, is, like, for most of the documentary, it's always, like, if you look at some of the players that got, like, Jordan and Scottie hyped up, it was always guys that Jeremy Krause liked, right? So I remember even when so Kukoc was the guy that they were bringing in, and Jordan and Pippen were like, okay, cool, we're going to show this kid. Also, shout out to Tony Kukoc for bouncing back in the finals and actually showing them what he's made of. Secondly, it was like the guy that's there. I can't remember the homie's name. I'm not sure if it's Danny Ainge or if it might be someone else. But when the Bulls were playing the Knicks and Michael Jordan was like, this Krause says this guy is as good as me. I'm going to show him. I'm going to shut this homie down. And it was, I think that's been a hallmark for like most of the series. It's like every time there's someone that Krause liked, those two guys were like, okay, we're going to make a point of showing you that we're better than you.
Definitely.
So
I mean, you wanna go?
No, you can.
No, go. I was gonna say, you mentioned the Knicks.
Yes.
And I mean, I suppose the Knicks, as much as they aren't a championship winning side, particularly of that time, you know, the Patrick Ewings and the John Starks, not being a championship winning side of that decade. It was also one of the most respected, and I mean, in the glimpses that we saw about them in these two episodes that came out this week, kind of see why. I mean, just how hard they played, how aggressive they were, and how skillful they were as well. I mean, I say hard and aggressive, you know, I look at someone like a John Starks, who was the smallest guy on the Knicks side, but in the footage, he was the one going against MJ. So you could be sure that he would be going up against him even beyond what was shown to us. And that's, you know, one player's going. And then when player's not going and they're actually like having a face off, he's not backing down from the greatest player in the world at the time. And he's the smallest guy on the court, you know, and it just shows the kind of, you know, another example of the kind of energy that the game was being at the time, which is pretty dope, you know, especially as you know, for of those who may not have experienced that and experiencing that in hindsight, and be experiencing a much softer version of it now, although it's really intense in its own right, but to have seen, to get insight into that and glimpses of that and a feel of the kind of energy that the game was being played at that time was also been quite an experience from the 6 episodes we've gotten so far.
Yeah, no, most definitely, dude. I think just looking at the way those homies used to go at each other, I think that's what makes that era of basketball quite dope as well. You know, like if you look at the way that Isaiah Thomas and the Bad Boy Pistons with Joe Dumars and the whole team used to foul and get in the Bulls' face to beat them. And I think that actually helps the Bulls go into the series against the Knicks because they tried to do the same thing. But obviously, the Bulls were already prepared for that because they'd gone through, you know, the Bad Boys and kind of like knew how to handle that kind of game. But you're right, John Starks. I mean, yo, dog, just seeing Patrick Ewing, that whole team going up against, you know, the Bulls and bringing that kind of mentality. That's the stuff that you love to see in the game, though, you know. Obviously, some of the play was a bit dangerous. Like, I remember Rodman pushing Scotty when Scotty was going for a dunk when Rodman was at the Pistons. But I mean, that's the stuff that made the game so dope to watch back then, right, Sooks?
Yeah, because I remember, like, I was fortunate enough to see some of those games, like, live, just, like, growing up. Like, I saw Jordan score 55 at the Garden. Like, I saw that happen on TV in, like, real time. So to see that kind of era again was, like, a nice little throwback because it was just a different level of intensity. Plus, I think also, to your point, one thing that was quite interesting, like, I mean, we saw the Celtics had to hand it over to the Pistons, and then the Pistons handed it over to the Bulls. The Bulls never handed it over to anyone.
Yeah.
Like, they literally were just, like, they left on their own accord. Like, no one took them out. Like, that's the crazy thing about them, is that, like, and that also speaks to, like, the mentality of, like, a Jordan and, like, the mentality of that team is, we can, like, I think it's safe to assume that if Jordan didn't leave for those 2 years, they would have won 8 straight championships, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually saw a video where Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen were like, because the next season was a lockdown season, right? So it was only 50 games. And Scottie Pippen was like, dog, we're going towards the end of our careers. We're old then. But I mean, the lockdown would have given us time to recover, to rest, get back into the groove. We would have gone 50-0. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, here is like the confidence that these guys had. It was also like insane.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think he just rubbed off on the whole team eventually. Like, when you've got someone like that, I mean, it's similar to what Kobe did for the Lakers. But obviously, I think he had to carry it, like, a lot more because it was like a transitional era.
Yeah.
But I think for Jordan's era, like, people knew, like, dude, it's basically like a, like, you're not just an athlete. You were almost similar to, like, almost similar to, like, a gladiator entering the arena. It's like, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
During those eras, it's like, dude, we're basically going to battle here. Like, this is going to be a hard, like a hard-nosed match. There's nothing pretty. I mean, like, in that era, the three-point game wasn't the way it is now. So everyone went towards the hoop, and you had to get dirty in there. So it was very interesting.
You know, even on that, I mean, I recall a Dennis Rodman interview that he did right now. I mean, he was promoting his 30 for 30, and he was doing so on First Take. And he was asked a question, who does he think the current Golden State Warriors team against his Detroit Pistons team, who would have, right? And Dennis Rodman says, that's absolutely crazy. In fact, I've got one for you. And then he responds by asking, the Warriors of then, would they beat the Warriors of now? And his reason was because he said that Warriors team, they averaged 120 points a game, but shot way less threes and way more twos. They were in the paint, field goals, the likes. So they scored 120 points per game on average, 2 pointers. You know, so again, just showing exactly then that was where it was at. You know, there was none of this thing that was happening on the arc. Beyond the arc. It was all within, and it was very physical then, and that's exactly, you know, what it is that the guys were ready to go for, and that's, I suppose, what gave it its charm at the time.
And you know, like, the thing is, I've actually been watching like a lot of like Dennis Rodman interviews, conversations. Like, the one thing I was watching today was his first take thing with, you know, Rachel Nichols and Scottie Pippen, where they talk about his documentary a lot and the Dream Team and, you know, the Bulls back then, because obviously that's the current topic of conversation. But when you listen to Dennis Rodman speak, like, you realize he's not just this, you know, outgoing, crazy character. This guy is actually quite clever. Like, he's actually done in terms of like his basketball knowledge, how he understands the game, how he appreciates people within the game. So and then another thing I want to say is that, you know, if you think about all the things we've spoken about now, right, and that's just mostly from the last two episodes of The Last Dance, these guys have like found a way to put a lot of things together in a very clever and intricate way. It's almost like Avengers Endgame, where they found a way to like squeeze all these storylines into one thing. I was telling Lesego about Jinji like 2 minutes ago. So Jinji actually sent me something on Instagram when she was telling me that, I don't know if you guys have picked it up, but there've been a lot of celebrities on that they showed, especially in the last episode, of like Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Spike Lee, Jack Nicholson, all coming to watch, you know, Jordan play, because that was a thing, right? But then she was like, did you also notice that the music they play is from the artist, from the city, from the year? And I was like, what are you talking about?
Like, it's all very relevant. Like LL Cool J, like, it's all very relevant to the time, which is dope. Like, I think it just helps to put you in that mindset. Yeah.
Oh, that was so dope. That was so dope. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about today, and so you can go first, is there's something quite interesting that I've noticed about, you know, this documentary as a whole. And firstly, it's Jordan's competitive spirit. And secondly, it's his ego, right? So when it comes to becoming, you know, a champion and becoming a great, do you think those are like two characteristics that you need to get to that level?
I think this goes to a conversation you and I had like before this, which I thought was like spot on, is that I think you can't say you're humble if you don't have an ego.
Yeah.
Cause like, if you're just humble, then you know what I mean? Like, you're too passive. Like, an ego is what kind of drives you. Like ego is what gets you to the next level. The belief that I can do it. So like, I think for someone like Jordan, obviously his is just like insane. Like, it's an insane competitiveness, which he mentioned came from his brothers, where like basically literally within his own family, he was competing. So like, I think that helped groom him to just kind of become more competitive and just always want the best. And I think that's an important trait to have, because I think we often get caught up in the thing of, oh, this guy's arrogant, this guy's this and that, this guy's whatever. But if you can't, but like, if you don't have that attitude and if you can't back it up, especially, then like, you know, you're always going to get found out. Whereas someone like Jordan, I mean, we saw throughout the series, he said, I'm like he would say, I'm going to do 1, 2, and 3. And he did it to like a whole another level almost. So I think that's an important thing to have, is that I think people get caught up in this whole, oh, you must just be humble. But it's like, no, every now and then you need your ego. Like Jay-Z said in that Bam song, sometimes you need your ego. Got to remind these fools who they're messing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is what I do. Like you're stepping into my office and I'm going to school you. Like, I think that like that energy is very important to have at times.
And what do you think, Lissa? Do you think that, like we said earlier on, like that's absolutely spot on. You can't be humble and have an ego. Like, it's either so you're humble and, you know, you're very passive, or you have, and there's also nothing wrong with having an ego. Like, having an ego sometimes can be a bad thing depending on how you use it, but then if you use it to back yourself and build yourself, it can be a good thing too. So Lesoho, on that note, right, do you think that Jordan would have been as great and, you know, the champion that he is today if he didn't have an ego? Because if you look at it, like, look at the Jordan thing that Tsuku spoke about at practice with the Dream Team in 92, where Magic Johnson was like, yeah, if you want to win this game, then you have to go at Jordan. And he was like, okay, cool, I'll show you. Or even when they were playing against the Knicks, and someone said something to him, and he was like, to Magic Johnson, watch, I'm going to put this guy on like skates tomorrow. I'm going to show him what time it is. Do you think like he'd be as great as he is without his ego?
No, I don't think so. Because someone like Jordan's case, right? I think the thing that makes him so great, right, is there have been players that have been talented, right? I mean, you look at someone like LeBron James, you know, Kareem, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson, right? But it's the smaller details that make Michael Jordan so great. I mean, like, you look at all that is available about Michael Jordan and the question that's asked, what is it? It's very difficult to explain because it's so nuanced. It's the difference between going up for a layup with three guys and coming down without having scored, or being determined to go through those three guys and put it up and then look at all three of them in the face and then saying that this is going to happen all night.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
And the source of that is the belief, to what Tsuku says. I think once you contextualize ego as, you know, self-belief, which I think is what Jordan had so much of, to the point where it does come across as being brash potentially, but definitely egotistic. But it is belief in his ability. You know, and that's what drove him from his college days to his rookie year. And for the rest of his career, it was just the drive that he had and the belief that he had, because he knew he was as great as he was. And he wanted win ultimately. So I think without that, we're not talking about MJ as much as we're talking about him right now.
True story. And I think also just to add on to what you said, you know, I think also we may have contextualized it as ego and having self-belief, but it's also about putting in work, right? Because I think part of having self-belief and having an ego is knowing that, because I mean, I think some people have an ego without being able to back it up because they haven't put in the work. Whereas with Michael Jordan and guys like LeBron James, and I mean, I think all those guys that you mentioned also had egos, or also have egos, because you can't be great without an ego, in my opinion. But also, to be great, you have to put in the work. And I think that's why Jordan knew he could do this or do that, or take on this guy or take on that guy, because he knew he'd put in the work. He knew he would still put in the work to make himself better. And that's why he has so much confidence in himself. And I think Tsuku and I were even talking about it, like someone like, you know, if you look at other sports, Lionel Messi is a humble guy, but on the field, he's probably got the biggest ego because he knows what he can do and he knows how talented he is, right? Muhammad Ali had an ego. Tiger Woods had an ego. So it almost goes hand to hand, you know, like it almost works hand in hand that if you want to be great, you need to have an ego. And another thing is, you know, some of the guys I mentioned, like Muhammad Ali and Tiger Woods, they have like individual sports, right? So you have to basically push yourself. So one thing that's also become a bit, you know, topical in this documentary was Michael Jordan an asshole to his teammates? What do you guys think?
No. I think Michael Jordan was focused.
Yeah.
He was focused on winning.
Yeah.
And he was focused on winning almost at any cost. Obviously ethically, but at any cost. We're not going to stop at anything until we win. And he was hard on his teammates because he knew that it was possible, but it wasn't easy. Yeah. And then he was ringing everybody. So again, yes, it come across as like, oh, shut. I mean, I wonder how that teammate would have could take that. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if everyone, I think it's a case of everyone just understanding the role that they play en route to the bigger goal that he is the leader of, you know, and everyone acknowledges him as the leader. So if he's going to be hard, I mean, it's not difficult to interpret that as a place that's coming, that's personal from in terms of where it's coming from. But you know that from a deep will to win, and which was infectious on the rest of the team. And that's why they ultimately were able to win 2 three-peats all in all, 6 championships. So no, I wouldn't say he was a leader. I'd just say he was a focused winner.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's also the thing, is like the thing that shows you he was a good leader to a degree as well, is that none of his teammates hate him, you know? So I think if he was a crappy leader, or if he was an asshole, then, you know, no one in this team would mess with him. I mean, he did punch Steve Kerr, which is a little bit sad, but I suppose it's part of the game. But I mean, Sugu, we've also spoken about this, right? About how there's different styles of leadership, right? So Steph Curry is more of a quiet leader, whereas, you know, Michael Jordan is more of like in your face, I'm going to pull you guys and drive you towards the championship. If you were to choose a leader to follow, which leader would you follow? Would you go with the Michael Jordan, like the pull you by the balls type, or would you be like a Steph Curry who's just like, come on guys, you can do this, let's all, you know, go. And I love Steph.
yeah, I think it's a bit tricky because there's more to it than that, because I think what Steph does is Steph is smart enough to know that, look, like for example, if you look at the KD situation, he knew that for that team to succeed, KD's got to feel loved. So he's like an empathetic leader, which for that instance was definitely needed, because I think like that's what helped them win those championships once KD was there. Because I think if you look at it, that season when they went 73-9, when they needed someone to go Jordan against the Cavs, he wasn't there to do it. So obviously, like in that instance, that's where you would definitely need someone like your Jordan will get you through that situation time and time again. So yeah. I think for Steph, he's the kind of guy whom, like, if you surround him, I mean, I guess it kind of goes for both of them, but if he's surrounded by enough, he'll almost make the most of, like, he'll amplify your strengths by how good he is at facilitating for other people. Whereas Jordan is the guy who's like, cool, I know all of us are good, but when the heat is on, I'm going to carry us there. Like, I'm going to be the general of this team. And I'm going to drag you all there, like basically by your ankles. Like, I'm dragging you guys to the promised land. So I think for me, like, it's just kind of tricky, but I guess Jordan's is the one you would want, because he's the one that's going to kind of get you those championships. Whereas I think Steph is going to keep everyone happy. Yeah. And just sort of make sure that the love is spread. Because that's why Golden State has that thing where Klay Thompson can, like, stand up. Where when they had KD, like a KD can step up. I mean, Draymond often sometimes runs the offense. And, yeah, like, I think he's good for teams or like a situation where you have multiple weapons. Whereas if you have one focal point, like, that triangle offense is made for guys like a Jordan and Kobe. So I think it just depends on the system you're working with, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually interesting that you mentioned that, because you made some really good points. And I think the two key things that stand out for me is I kind of feel like you need both, right? So if you look at the Warriors team, Draymond was that guy that's in people's faces, like pushing people to do better, whereas Steph was the more empathetic leader, right? So even with the Bulls, Jordan and Scottie were in people's faces, but Phil Jackson was the one that was like being empathetic and just pulling the group together. And the crazy thing about Steph is, even with KD, and apparently part of the reason that KD left, was it still felt like Steph's team, because that's just how, you know, how Steph kind of like was drew people to him just by his empathetic nature. Like, you don't always have to be in people's faces. I think you just have to go with your character, and that'll ultimately lead people back to, you know, to you, and you can lead naturally. So obviously chemistry is an important thing, which brings us to one of the most, the most disputed topics from the episodes that aired this week. Isaiah Thomas and the Dream Team. I mean, that was quite hard. What do you guys think? Would you guys have taken Isaiah Thomas to the Olympics in 92? Or would you have left him behind like Michael Jordan and the USA team did? Lesego, I see you want to answer this one.
Yeah, get in there, Doc.
I'm going to answer with the question and be like, when you say we, like, who's we, you know?
So, in which role? The context of the team that went to, because you saw that in the documentary, had like Isaiah was like pretty much beefing with all those guys.
Right.
So yeah, if you were one of those guys, would you? Do you think he would have messed up the chemistry? Because I think it goes without saying that he had the talent.
Yeah. You see, again, of the time that they were playing with makes it understandable. You know, it really does. It really, really does. Just because of how personal it got.
Yeah.
It really was a personal duel. I mean, as much that you look at the respect that Larry Bird and Magic Johnson have for each other to this day. When they were playing against each other in the late 80s for the championships and the many times that they did, it wasn't nearly as much as respectful as it was now. There was beef there, you know, up until like the certain latter stages of their rivalry. You know? Then in comes the Detroit Pistons, you know, who used that approach to offset that. So they had to, you know, be rough and tough at a much higher level. So it was really, really personal. But I think because of what the Dream Team represented, you know, the stars of stars of the time, of which Isaiah Thomas was, it would just have to be a case of laying that mandate down and saying you are being included on this basis, that, you know, you are one of the best that this league has to offer.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
and I think on that front, I would have extended an invite. I wouldn't have shunned them out because of, you know, what took place, because of what the team that was ultimately assembled represented.
At the risk of messing up the chemistry that you saw that team had together.
Yeah, no, I mean, because everyone will understand why they're there. Everyone would understand that, you know, I'm one of this league's best 12.
Yeah,
you know. And that's it. So yes, at the times, and also Isaiah Thomas would have been outnumbered because everybody else would have been on the same page in terms of the kind of chemistry and camaraderie that they're trying to build. Someone like an Isaiah Thomas would have offset that. So if it meant as much to be part of that team, then there would have to be some sort of assimilation to whatever culture was being set.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a part of it, then you would have to ascribe to it. But I think, you know, with the criteria being the best available players of the time, mm-hmm. I would have at least offered him the invitation and let him make up his mind in terms of whether he wants to be part of the team. No doubt.
Yeah. So I'm a firm believer of, like, documentaries tell you the story, but they don't always tell you the true story or the real story. So what I love about basketball players is they're not actors, right? They're basketball players. Sure. We all work in advertising and we know what it's like to shoot an ad with an athlete. Sometimes you get good performances, sometimes you don't. So the interesting thing for me has been seeing, like, I watched an interview with Pippen and, you know, Magic Johnson on separate occasions where they addressed this thing with Isaiah Thomas. And even Charles Barkley, you know. So I think the whole thing was, like, on the show, on the documentary, Jordan is like, it wasn't my decision not to invite Isaiah Thomas. He was like, the whole team felt that way. And then on his thing, Charles Barkley is like, I didn't even know that, you know, Isaiah Thomas wasn't invited. So it's like, okay, it's things like that. And then you do get the sense that it wasn't just Michael Jordan, but there were a few other players, but it wasn't the whole team that didn't want him to play. So I don't know, Sugu, what was your take on it? Do you think it was an MJ thing where he was like, I definitely don't want this dude to play? Or was it like, do you think there was more to it? Like, there were a few other players, not necessarily the whole team, but a few other players were like, nah, fam.
Personally, I think it was marketing and like a brand thing. Like, Isaiah Thomas is very controversial. Like, he had instances where he made a comment. Well, like, Dennis Rodman made the comment, but then Isaiah backed it up to say that if Larry Bird was black, he'd just be like another black dude. And that really killed his reputation in the media. So, yeah. Like, I think things like that and just his whole attitude in general, like, I think, I mean, Dream Team, as much as it's about getting the best players, this was a marketing ploy for them. Yes. Like, that's what helped them sell the NBA to the rest of the world. It's like, because at that stage, Jordan was, like, a big star. So, it's like, cool, Jordan is basketball. Jordan is the Dream Team. And then we've got guys around him that are going to make it happen. But, I mean, Jordan is the Dream Team. And the irony is, like, the coach of the Pistons, Chuck Daly, was their coach. So if Chuck Daly can't get Isaiah Thomas in there, then it tells you that it's like, it's like, it's obviously like a bit of a marketing thing. And like, no one ever asked Chuck why he wasn't there. Like, they asked the players, but it's like Chuck Daly was his coach. So for me, I think it was like I think things like the chemistry played a role, but I think his brand just wouldn't have suited the aesthetic of the Dream Team. And even going back to like things on the court, Magic Johnson's the point guard. Where's Isaiah Thomas going to fit in when you've got Magic Johnson? Like Magic Johnson Magic Johnson is Showtime basketball. So again, from that marketing standpoint, Magic Johnson's going to give you those flashy passes. He's going to entertain the crowd more. Whereas Pistons was like hard-nosed basketball. That's not going to like make people want to engage with the game. So like for me, I felt it was like maybe less basketball and more like a business play from the NBA and from the Dream Team perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely do think that, you know, it probably had to do with like marketing and, you know, the players wanting to be comfortable with the people in the team. And I think, I personally think that Jordan wasn't the only one who wants him on the team, but I personally feel like it was his final say to be like, yeah, I don't think dude should come to.
Definitely. Yeah.
So then, if that's in the case, do you guys then think that Isaiah Thomas is as touched as how he showed himself to be on the documentary?
Yeah,
definitely, 100%. Did you see his post where he posted the photo with Mandela? Recently, I mean, his name is being dragged through the dirt, but he's like, "Well, fuck you guys. I have got the photo with Mandela. Your hero doesn't have that." You know what I mean? Like, that was just like, "Fuck you." Yeah. So everyone talking shit.
Also, like, I don't understand why everyone's giving Isaiah Thomas, you know, such a bad time. Like, he and so many basketball players who played against him have said, Magic Johnson is probably the best point guard of all time, but the best pure point guard is Isaiah Thomas and then John Stockton. And funny enough, it was a choice between Stockton and Isaiah Thomas, and they went to Stockton for, you know, reasons we've just discussed. And then before we wrap up the show, we have to do something that, you know, that kind of speaks to the culture a little bit. The Air Jordan ones in this game in Chicago. I can't remember if it was his last game in Chicago or the game. I think it was
in New York. Yeah, Madison Square.
He put on the first pair of. How dope do those sneakers look even back then, bro? Like, how fresh were those sneaks, fam?
Timeless.
It's the only way, man. It's. I agree. It's the only way to describe them. I mean, you know, first wearing them in the 80s. So they were birthed in the 80s. You know, he wraps up his time at the Garden in the late 90s. Then come the 2000s. We are now in the fifth decade since. They look as fresh as ever. It's the craziest thing. It's the craziest thing.
And what's crazy is they're still uncomfortable, but we still wear them. Yeah, like those shoes are not comfortable.
I mean, this is new information for me.
Yeah,
that they're as comfortable as what you say they are. So
no, they are not comfortable at all. Oh, so yeah, like now you can
want to make a plan with that, or
no, like they haven't even upgraded the design. They stuck to the original. Like the original, they're great shoes to wear, but you can't wear them forever. Yeah,
you have to pick and choose where you wear them. But I love my Jordans. So I wouldn't change them for anything.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So on that note, guys, it's been we actually went on for quite a bit. And I have to admit, Lizzo, you were on point, succinct, to the point, you know. So,
yeah, it was good to have you, man. Good to have you.
So I'm going to give you guys to say your final notes, whatever it is you want to say. Zuku, you can go first and we'll let Lizzo go last.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to more episodes of the Back Four series. I want to say thank you to everybody for the love that they've shown to the podcast since we've gone into this sort of new format during lockdown.
This is beyond the This is not the Back Four.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but let me shout out the homie Lesejo as well. Like, check out the Back Four. That's some dope content. I've been checking that out. But yeah, also just for us and our side, we just want to thank you guys for all the love we've been getting. And we hope you keep tuning in. We're going to keep on doing this for the time being, and yeah, just stay safe out there.
Yeah, man. I just want to say, Lesejo, it's been dope having you on the show. I mean, we talk about basketball all the time, on air, off air. out while people are partying and getting drunk. We're like in the early hours, recovering from hangovers, we're out talking basketball. So I mean, I know you're busy with work as well, killing it at VML with your strats. So really appreciate you coming through, and everyone, like Suki said, who's been tuning into the episodes, subscribing even, which is insane. You're much loved to everyone who supported us from day one, and everyone who's still supporting us today.
It's my turn. gents, shout out. First of all, thank you very much for the invitation, gents. I mean, it was a long time coming, if we were to be honest. So for us to have finally gotten it done has been dope. I am very sure that this is not going to be the last version of this that we do have. We'll definitely have more partnerships like this. We'll invite you over to our side sometime soon. We'll chop up some more basketball. I've got a few other homies there who I'm sure will be more than welcome, more than happy to have a much bigger basketball conversation. So we'll definitely talk about that. But as it pertains to the show, as it pertains to Beyond the Arc, big ups from my side, guys. I've really been a fan of the work that you guys are putting in, the passion that you're showing on the show, and just feeling the passion for the game coming through the podcast. I think it's been really dope. I can only support you guys to continue pushing. Long live ball, because ball is life.
Ball is life.
Yeah, man, straight up. You guys Mamba are forever, low key as well.
You guys are proving the misconception that basketball is for people with Waldo-C accents. Anyway, until the next episode,
salute.